Thanks, Rob. It is the download here on Chicago very own 720 WGN. All right. Coming up 9 o'clock hour tonight. I'm very excited about this. Nabi Asomugha, the former NFL star, cornerback who played for the Eagles, the Raiders, other teams, has made a transition in his life after he retired football to Hollywood. He is an actor and a producer of the new movie Crown Heights, which won the top prize for drama at Sundance and is now in select theaters. It tells the story of Colin Warner, a Brooklyn man who was falsely accused and convicted of murder, exonerated 21 years later. It's played by Keith Stanfield from Atlanta, from Get Out. But Colin Warner in studio. We're going to talk with him about his life, a life that's had 21 years behind bars. That's coming up at 9 o'clock tonight. My guest tonight at the big table is currently the Chicago Treasurer. He's been so since appointed by the mayor in 2014. He was elected in 2015. Kurt Summers came to politics through finance, where he was part of capital management and global strategy firms. He got his start in politics as chief of staff of Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. His job as treasurer to serve as Chicago's investor, Chicago's banker, Chicago's economic developer. Summers is a rising star in the Democratic Party, with some wondering if he was going to throw his hat in the ring for governor. Earlier this summer, he announced he was not running and instead backed businessman J.B. Pritzker for the job. Kurt Summers, my guest tonight, talk finance, politics, and the future of the Illinois Democratic Party. Treasurer Summers, welcome to Download. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's first talk tonight. I'm fascinated by your job. I told you right before the break that I spent the better part of the afternoon figuring out what a treasurer does. it blew my mind. But essentially, just to set it up, I mean, you are Chicago's investor. I mean, you have billions of dollars in portfolio that you're investing on behalf of Chicago.
That's right. As of yesterday evening, about $7.8 billion. And we invest on behalf of every resident of Chicago. And it's everything from tax revenues to bond proceeds to monies that we receive from the airports and revenues in that fashion. Our job is to invest them, earn money on them for the people of Chicago, and manage the accounts so that everything is on the up and up.
Yeah, as you mentioned, as of yesterday, because the quarterly earning report is in,
yeah.
The alderman today sort of lightly grilling you about what happened to the money that was on top. I mean, you reported in the spring that you had return on investment, meaning there was more money than you thought there was going to be. And everybody this summer was asking for it. They wanted it. And the mayor kind of said, no. And now everyone wants to know where that money went.
Yeah.
Where are we at with that?
Yeah. Well, I think you and some other members of the city council probably both learned today what the treasurer actually does, and that we don't allocate the money. So last year we generated $125 million of interest income and profits from investing. And that some of that money belongs to what's called the enterprise fund. So water, sewer, airports, and then some of it belongs to the general corporation. And when you have in the course of a year some revenues like interest income, you'll generate more revenues.
Mm-hmm.
Other revenues, you may expect you'll get more parking revenue, you'll get more revenue from different transaction taxes, and you may get less. And it's the job of the administration, the budget director, the CFO, to make all those things balance at the end of the year and you know, make the surpluses outweigh, hopefully, the areas where you're short.
The only issue, but I think somewhat interesting, is that many aldermen stepped forward wanting a piece of that, and a lot of people wanted a violence prevention program this summer.
Yeah.
But this all was sparked by the idea of you coming forward and putting out a press release essentially saying, we've got this extra money, and you got everybody's attention.
Right.
If you can't appropriate the money, and it's a CFO's job or somebody else's, why alert everybody, including the press, that we're making more money than we should?
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. One, it's my job to, right? So we're being transparent in this job in a way that no city in the country is. We do quarterly earnings calls. We have annual reviews of what our investment earnings are. And we did the same thing last year when we exceeded our revenue. And we came out and said, look, we've exceeded our revenue. My team, who I'm proud of, did a great job this year, and they should be applauded. And that's more revenue, more money for the people of Chicago. So I'm always going to do that.
Yeah.
And not avoid the debate on where it should be spent. That's up to the council and that's up to the administration. My job is to just keep generating more of that. The other thing is, you know, we're launching a fund right now that is investing in Chicago and investing in Chicago's neighborhoods. And my point there was to say, look, if we're generating more money, I want to look for more funds.
This would be the Catalyst Fund, right?
The Catalyst Fund, the Chicago Community Catalyst Fund. So if we're generating more money, I want to look for more funds to invest. I'd like to stand at the other side of that line too and say, hey, we've got more capital here to invest. So so that's, you know, I think the conversation that we should be having. This is good debate,
right?
To say, you know, what are our priorities? It's not just a black and white budget document. These are our policy priorities. These are our priorities on what we believe in and how this city should be governed.
You know, it's interesting too, because there's the investment part, there's the banker part, there's the economic development part. And you talk about the Catalyst Fund. You know, this is a fund that, you know, when you talk about the 77 neighborhoods of Chicago, that whenever I have anybody in here who might be someone who's for social justice or an activist or someone who represents a neighborhood, they will say the reason we have violence, the reason we have crime, the reason we have poverty, is there's no economic development in this area. And so it is, in a sense, your job to answer their questions. I mean, when they come forward and they say, hey, why is the city not investing in this area? Why aren't businesses investing in Inglewood?
Yep.
What's your answer to that as a Chicago treasurer who, I mean, at the end of the day, that's on the letterhead. This is your job to be an economic developer.
Yeah, so I took this job a little over 2.5 years ago, and I walked in and I thought it was shocking that we have a mandate to invest everywhere in the world. Like, we have a mandate to invest in South America, in the Middle East, in East Asia, in Western Europe, everywhere but the third largest market in the largest economy in the world, which happens to be our backyard. And it was crazy to me that our mandate to invest in Chicago was 0%. Not just in the treasury portfolio, but in our pension funds and you name it. And the reason for that effectively was political risk. You know, people didn't want the headline risk of, I invested in a local deal and it blew up. If you invest in a third world country dictatorship and it gets overthrown by the government and the state-owned enterprise blows up and you lose $50 million, it'll never hit the front page of the Chicago Tribune.
Interesting.
If you invest in your own backyard, and that deal happens to have some connected attorney who's the cousin of Alderman so-and-so who was grilling me today, then it's going to show up on the front page. And so there's an aversion to looking here because, you know, as a bureaucrat that or as someone who is interested in, you know, their own political existence going forward, that seems like a risky proposition.
Yeah.
And from my perspective, it's crazy to me that we don't invest here.
You come from the private sector. I mean, what's stopping the private sector from doing just that now? Because they don't have to worry about being on the front page. I mean, if there's no political risk, what's stopping a private sector from investing in the West Side or the South Side of Chicago?
Look, I grew up in the Bronzeville area. And if I, you know, took you around the blocks where I grew up, they look very similar to the way they did 30 years ago. And what stops them is the same thing that's been stopping them for the last several decades. There's a systemic bias that exists when it comes to traditional capital finding its way into non-traditional locales. And I would call those non-traditional locales. They're difficult for traditional investors to figure out, how do I underwrite this? Mm-hmm. How do I understand what's going to happen with this population? How do I know what this risk profile looks like? They're difficult to underwrite. And so as a result, the gap in the access to capital has just been wider and wider and wider. It makes it more and more difficult. And then it becomes a cumulative effect because then you say, well, gee, why didn't someone do it a decade ago? Well, they were asked the same questions you did, and then they never got off the dime and invested, so you're never going to get off the dime and invest. That widening and access to capital means lack of jobs, lack of economic opportunity, and I tend to subscribe with your guests who have said, so, you know, the quote that I have all the time is that we don't have a violence problem in the city. We have an economic problem. That's the root cause of what's happening here.
Could the city of Chicago and the treasurer's office, could you be a leader in that form? Could you be a leader and show the private sector how it's done and be able to non-traditionally invest in these communities and say, hey, here's the blueprint, here's the roadmap, let's go?
100%, that's what we're doing. So this $100 million is meant to be a seed that we're leveraging incremental capital from the private sector and saying, guys, we're all looking at this opportunity together. You're not alone. And we're taking the first big step. And we'll partner with you on how to invest in these neighborhoods, mm-hmm. how to look at these businesses and what their growth opportunities are, and how to underwrite the opportunity that people in these neighborhoods represent.
Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers, my guest tonight at the big table. We're talking finance. It's good stuff. Let's do this. We'll take a break and we'll come back. And I want to talk a little bit more about this because the mayor was in front of Malcolm X College not too long ago. I mean, I feel like it's now months where he really kind of said he wanted the private sector to step up, the private business community to step up in some of these issues. And I want to get your take on where you see private sector Chicago businesses playing a part in the infrastructure and the redevelopment of Chicago as we know it. Kurt Summers, my guest, the treasurer. Stay with us. In studio with me tonight at the big table, Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers. We're talking about economic development. This has turned into a big ticket, long-term conversation. But, you know, I'm interested because you hear it all the time, as we mentioned, when we talk about economic development and the Treasurer's Office, which is really involved in investments on Chicago's money. You hear it all the time that you could get rid of a lot of societal ills if economic development was present. You know, when you think, and this is not just a conversation for Chicago. I feel like this is a conversation. We're just thinking about Harvard, Illinois, and they had their issues with Motorola and big businesses coming in or businesses leaving towns. I think of so many different places that have lost. And, you know, when it comes down to it, I mean, how important is it for the city or any municipality to be in this game, to say this is not, we're not going to let private market and everything else just sort of figure it out. We have to take charge and sort of lead the way when it comes to economic development.
Yeah, I mean, I think the leaders of this city, both in the public and the private sector, have to take the reins and control their own destiny a bit and be a part of designing the future. This is, you know, our generation's Burnham plan. You know, that wouldn't have happened without a plan commission and civic leaders and partners saying, this is what we want our city to look like. This is what we want it to be about. This is what we want it to stand for, how we want it to be shaped, who we want to attract to live here, and what we're going to be investing in. Mm-hmm. If we didn't do that then, we wouldn't have had a century of progress that we had, and we wouldn't be the great city that we are. It's the same thing now. We are in a situation. I was telling someone, if you looked in the sort of last quarter of last year, first quarter of this year, that 6 month period, we had half a dozen or more front page articles in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Financial Times, Washington Post, all around Chicago and its violence. Yeah. Not its economic opportunity, not this thriving metropolis, not what's happening with, you know, our median income or new companies who are locating here. It was about the violence. It's hard to recruit people to come here when that's on the front page. It's hard to get companies to double down and build more investment when that's, you know, on the front page of leading financial newspapers and journals. It's not really attracting investment.
Journal, right.
You're on the FT and the Wall Street Journal saying, look at the bloody weekend Chicago had.
Are private businesses paying attention to that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think if you talk to business leaders here, you know, increasingly the future in business competition is about people and about innovation. And if you can't have the right people and you can't attract them and you can't innovate, it makes it pretty damn hard to continue to attract the best and brightest when you have these social issues going on. And folks have to come here and tell their parents, don't worry about it, Mom, I'll be okay. Don't worry, that's in that part of town, not in this part of town. If you're not from here, it's difficult for folks to understand that. Yeah. And it's difficult for folks when we have questions questions, forget about the violence for a second. We have questions like, will we open schools on time? Well, how do you get a young family to move here? They don't even know if their schools are going
to
open.
I mean, it's similar to what we saw today with the Dow, this idea that when there is tumult and stress, and whether it be North Korea or whether it be other areas or hurricane, what have you, it does affect money. And it affects people's confidence in money. When you talk about local issues of violence or local issues of schools and infrastructure, does it affect Chicago's money? I mean, does it the same way that the Dow?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you just look at the portfolio of stocks. This question about schools, I mean, look at the last week, there was an article in the Journal that said the price of Chicago's bonds went up 20 points, 20 percentage points in the course in between, you know, between the end of session and last week,
yeah,
because there's a budget deal. So that 20 points has a direct impact on the cost of doing business in the city of Chicago. And that's just volatility driven by political battles and battles through the media between, you know, a governor, a speaker, a mayor. Nothing changed in the fundamental valuation of anything. The number of students didn't change. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that we value, but, the school start date didn't change. You know?
I mean, here's the thing. You got a governor who ran on the platform that he was a businessman. You got a mayor who dabbled in being a fund, a capital, I don't even know which hedge fund, whatever it is, right? He's a money guy. You're a money guy. I mean, I was for Speaker Madigan's a lawyer at certain points. You guys all know this. So how is it that the political battles get in the way of affecting our bottom line?
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, I'd say that all four of those folks that you mentioned have kind of different backgrounds. But I think that sometimes, you know, politics, especially in Chicago and in Springfield, is where logic goes to die. And things that are seemingly straightforward before people get in these roles get overshadowed by the political battle, ego, and a host of things that have nothing to do with what's best for the residents, what's best for the children in schools, what's best for the future of the city or the state.
But that's their job.
It's 100%
their job. It's elected officials. As we look at, and I hear this all the time, and you know, you'll hear that Illinois, and we hear this Chicago, but Illinois more likely, needs to be a more business-friendly state. And I hear this all the time in the rhetoric, and it's in the political battles, especially with Rauner and the unions, the public unions. What does that mean? From your vantage point of being in finance and your background of being the Chicago treasurer, what does it mean to be a business-friendly municipality?
Yeah. So let me separate the dog whistle politics from reality, right? There's dog whistle politics of business friendly, meaning anti collective bargaining, anti organized labor, in anti union. Well, Chicago's the birthplace of the modern day labor movement. It's not going to happen here, right? So that kind of ideological battle is really not where the fight needs to be. The real question when you're asking what's business friendly, mm-hmm, is what's the total cost of doing business here? How hard is it for me to recruit people here versus recruit people other places? We have 160,000 college graduates that come out of the Chicago area every year. How does that compare to other parts of the country? Pretty good. What's the, you know, percentage of the population per capita that has a college degree? We're the highest in the nation in that regard. How difficult is it for me to see and visit clients? We have a quarter of the Fortune 500 within 150 miles here, you know, and so worst case, a really short flight. We have accessibility to things that lower the cost of business. Too often, the conversation is centered around what is your marginal tax rate, corporate tax rate, and are you unionized? And so what's going to happen to, you know, am I going to be bargained or not? And then the third area, which I think that there is opportunity for people to align and agree on, is in this area of workers' comp, because there's a real cost to that. And I think that that's an opportunity for both sides to agree. But let's stop having the conversation about just the tax environment and say, what's it cost to do business here? What's the cost per square foot of my land here, which is less than the other top five cities that are attracting business. Mm-hmm. What, how hard is it for me to recruit, which is easier than most other places? What's the quality of the talent pool that already exists here, which is higher than most other places? All those things factor into your cost of doing business.
Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers in studio with me at the big table tonight. We're talking business, finance, and economic development here on The Download. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news, and we'll continue the conversation with Treasurer Summers. Stay with us. Thank you, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Back in the saddle. I had a week off vacation. We're back in tonight. Big table. My first big table back. Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers. We're talking, you know, the little coffee table conversation about economic development, finances, pensions.
Keeping it light.
Keeping it light here on a Tuesday night. All right. Let's get into the issue of pensions, because that's something that I feel a lot of people want to gloss over and they want to make it political. But it does have an effect. It's had a catastrophic effect on Illinois politics in the last 4 years, 5 years. This idea that we've created a system where pension payments to the people who are receiving pensions from the state are on a sliding scale, and they continue to balloon and balloon and balloon. And more often than not, we're seeing that in some municipalities in the state and as well as different institutions like CPS. You're seeing pension payments that are half of the budget. As a city treasurer, and you sit on a lot of the local pension boards, paint a picture for us. I mean, are we at the top end of this? Are we at the point where we're like, whew, we got through that pension stuff?
Right.
Or is the worst yet to come?
So let me start with Illinois, which ranks 47th out of 50 states in pension funding. You know, so we're at the very, very bottom, both in terms of size of the total pension debt, percentage of unfunded liability, and amount of debt per home. You know, amount of pension debt per home in Illinois is second only to, I think, Connecticut. So we're at the bottom, folks, you know, of the list. And then if you sort of migrate up to Chicago, you know, in Chicago there have been some things done, some reforms made on pensions, which have changed some of the funding largely to them and moved them to a ramp so that we don't really get in this place again. We have to, at some point in the near future, 2023 actually, have be putting our actuarial required contribution in, meaning we can't take pension holidays, we can't not pay into the fund, we can't pay less than what's required going forward. Or we'll just have to go to Springfield again and change the legislation.
Yeah, people
do. But in principle, that shouldn't change. Here's the issue with that. To get between now and 2023, there's another $1.3 to $1.5 billion that we've got to figure out that we don't have funding solutions for today, and that will be an ongoing, you know, $900 to $1 billion of revenue, largely, meaning, you know, in layman's terms, taxes for most people that have to be met. So we're by no means out of the woods, and we've inherited this situation. You know, I tell people all the time, most of the folks who are sitting on these pension boards or who are legislators, save for one or two very well-known ones, they weren't there to create this mess, but we all have inherited it together. And you know, when I wasn't born and when the state had its last constitutional convention, which created a fundamental constitutional right for workers for these benefits. So, you know, we've inherited these things and now we have to work on them together, and we can't not, you know, address them in a way that is forward looking. And that means both the workers,
right,
and the taxpayers and the politicians all have to think about this a little bit differently.
You know, it is interesting because, you know, we've had the Supreme Court weigh in, the Illinois Supreme Court weighed in and said, hey, you know, you can't, this money's already been paid in. You owe this money. There's no way any handshake deal that's been made has to be honored. Don't you can't weasel your way around this. Like, that's essentially what's happening. And that has really kind of tied the hands of politicians both in Springfield and in Chicago in the way that you can't really do reform on the pensions that are existing.
Yeah, I mean,
but you can look to the pensions of the future.
That's right. I mean, if you look at, for example, Dallas just went through a restructuring. They didn't have this issue of having this constitutional right that you can't change benefits. So they were able to do so and do so in a productive way that worked for everyone involved. In this case, I give people the example all the time. You know, most of these pensions, people work for 30 years and then they get a fully vested pension. Well, someone could be working for 15 years and what they've paid into is their right. It's their constitutional right. It's their benefit. And no one can take that away from them. But just like with any other annuity or any other retirement plan, the next 15 years, you paid into it at 8 or 8.5%, mm-hmm. you may have to pay into a little bit more, 10, 11, 12, 13%.
That's outside of the Illinois Supreme Court. That's not unconstitutional to do.
That's correct. That's, and it's also not uncommon. And if you're going to go to taxpayers and say, hey guys, all of us got this wrong in the past. All of us were signing checks to get reelected. And, you know, as labor leaders or as elected leaders, mm-hmm. folks were signing checks now that didn't have to get cashed until 30 years in the future, so they get reelected today. You know, you have a messed up incentive system here. So we all inherit this together. If you got to go back to taxpayers and say we need another $1 billion of taxes, you have to go to the folks who aren't fully vested yet and say, you know, what you've got, and you've earned it, and you've paid into it. Now let's look forward and talk about what it costs you, the employee, not just the employer,
right,
to keep that benefit going forward.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I'll have people who text in right now where one person says, don't you dare take my money away, right? And that's...
Don't want to.
But that's a fear.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, people say, why should government employees get pensions? I work in the private sector. I don't get a pension.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you see this. These are crystallizing, simplistic kind of views towards pension reform or pensions and how they work.
Yeah, let me be really clear. It is any worker's constitutional right to get everything that they've earned. No, I have no desire, and I think any sort of smart politician in Chicago or in Illinois should have zero desire to take that away from them if they want to maintain their status here, and if they just want to be a good and decent person. You can't take that away from retirees. You can't take that away from workers who have earned what they've earned.
They earned it.
We're talking about going forward. What's that look like? And I think if you have to have a go forward different conversation with one part of the equation, you got to have it with the other. In the case of the, you know, why should workers have pensions when private employees don't? Look, I think defined benefit pensions in this country have been declining and declining and declining year after year after year in every industry. And I think in some public places, folks have included new concepts of defined contributions, 401ks, retirement plans. Those things are difficult, I think, for folks to transition to, and they're very complicated, and it's just like Social Security. You take all the risk and you put it on the individual.
Right, stock market, right.
Right, and so some folks want to maintain the option and say, wait a second, I don't want to take stock risk. I want to know that I worked hard and there's going to be a retirement there. And I think that most people would say, if that's an option that's been provided in the past, we can provide that option in the future. And I think increasingly people are looking and saying, can we provide other options, not mandates, but other options?
Is there a future? And I say this as a taxpayer and as somebody who's observed what's happened. I don't have a pension, but observe what's happening, that we just take politicians out of it. They shouldn't be managing pension funds. We've seen what's happened. The pension holidays and the mispayments have put us in this position where people are now in on shaky ground about whether or not they're going to be able to retire in the same way they thought they were. I mean, is there a future where you see that, hey, you know, this should be offloaded to people who do this, not the guy we elected to be treasurer? And nothing against you, but
no, it's fine. The guy you elected to be treasurer probably actually has the best background.
Yeah, right. Sure. But
background to do
you
it.
See but what I'm saying.
But I think that the there is a model where that exists elsewhere in the country. You see it in D.C. or the D.C. Retirement Board, but that was effectively the result of a federal takeover. You see it in some other large municipalities and small, most of whom have had a bankruptcy issue or they've had mm-hmm. some event that caused it. I don't see that happening here, but I do think that we should be aware of the decision makers, right? So you have, you know, elected union leaders who want to get reelected and want to do what's right for the worker. And they clearly have a vantage point that wants to benefit the worker in many cases. And you have appointees from elected leaders, from politicians who want to get reelected. Yeah, right. Who wanted to, and so, you know,
it gets in the way. I mean, the personal ambition gets in the way.
Personal ambition, politics, oftentimes get in the way, but the decision makers aren't the ones who sit on these boards. You know, the decision makers, pensions in Illinois, in any town and city in Illinois, but especially in Chicago, are all functions of state government. These are all, you can't make a single administrative change in a pension without going to Springfield. Right. So ultimately, the folks who decide and determine this stuff, you know, sit in the General Assembly.
Kurt Summers, my guest, the Chicago treasurer. Earlier this summer, the rumor winds had you thinking about a run for governor. Were you thinking about it? I mean, was that something that you were considering?
Yeah, I mean, it was more than the rumor winds. It was a reality. It was, you know, conversations with pollsters and with consultants and with the most important consultant, my wife, about the future of this state. And, you know, the reality was really looking at who was being served well in Illinois and who's being served poorly and how do we fix that. And under every circumstance that I could consider, the current leadership, the current administration or lack of leadership had to go. And so the question was, who's the right person to replace him?
Why did you decide not to?
Yeah, ultimately, what I decided was that, you know, everyone has a purpose and that purpose has a season. And, you know, you have to be willing to lay it all on the line for that fight in this season. And I feel like for me, this wasn't the fight for this season. And the bigger question for me was, if I didn't do it, was there someone there who would fight that fight as well as I think I could and would listen to people that I would listen to? And I found that person to support in J.B. Pritzker.
J.B. Pritzker and Julie Stratton as well, who's his running mate. You know, today starts the day with petitions. I mean, here we go with the run for governor in 2018.
Yeah.
Marilyn Katz was on the show not too long ago. She sat down and she said pointedly, she said, there is no way to win as a Democrat in the state of Illinois without the black community in Chicago. That's what she said. She said, there's just no way. There's no way around it. Does J.B. Pritzker have inroads in that community? And can he be can he win Illinois without it?
Yeah. Let me just say this, just to give you the numbers, which sort of spoke to my own viability as a African-American elected official. The black vote in the Democratic primary in Illinois is 25-30% of the vote. It is the single largest electoral voting bloc in the traditional Democratic primary. So hard to win without having significant inroads there and having a good showing, if not a majority of those voters. I think that JB, not because of his selection of Juliana, who's a friend of mine who used to work with me in Cook County and who I've known for a long time, not because of that selection. I think people vote for the top of the ticket. I think because JB gets it and JB cares and understands, here's the plight of people who are less fortunate. Here's the plight of people who are minorities in this state. Here's the plight of people who have dealt with lack of access, lack of opportunity, and a disconnection to, you know, the opportunities that are available for all people in Illinois. I think he gets that and understands that, how he can bridge the gap and make that connection. He's focused on jobs. He's focused on early childhood education. He's focused on investing in neighborhoods. He's focused on eliminating the wage gap and building businesses here that will invest here. And so I think that's all the right thing. And you go to any community, it doesn't just have to be the Black community, but you go to any community where you have working people and you say, I want to raise the wage, I want to increase jobs, I want to lower the barriers that you have to a better life for yourself and your family, I want to improve the education system here, people would say, great, where do we go? Where do I sign up?
For you, I mean, what does higher office look like for you? I mean, you're the Chicago treasurer right now. That position is one that treasurers in both the city and the state have been jumping off points for bigger and different ambitions. I mean, for you, I mean, do you see yourself staying as treasurer, or do you have eyes on other citywide positions that may be above you?
Yeah, I think
that's a very polite, politically correct way to say, are you going to run for mayor?
No, I got it. I read between the lines of that one. Very subtle. I think, first of all, I love my job. I love doing this. I was a finance major. I was the kid who, you know, my favorite restaurant growing up was McDonald's, and it was a treat for me to go to McDonald's, and every kid would come home ripping open their Happy Meal and show their toy, and I'd come home and ask my mom, why don't we own McDonald's stock? You know, it was just a different kind of kid. So I spent my life really preparing for this point and this moment to take this craft that I built in finance and in investments and in the private sector and apply it to the city that I love and apply it to all the people of the city. And we're doing a great job. And so I have, today is the first day of petitions for governor. We're about a year out for petitions for treasurer again, or mayor, or any other office. So I got a year to think about what I want to do next. But in the meantime, I love this job, and there's no shortage of problems that we all have to solve. If you ever have a guest and they say for a race that's literally 18 months from now, I'm thinking about that now, you're ignoring the problems that we really have today. And I'm focused on that.
All right. That's a good answer. Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers in studio tonight, my guest at the big table. Treasurer Summers, thanks for being here. Appreciate the conversation.
Thanks for having me.